Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you. It's just after 10 o'clock. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon, and Dr. Samira Umat has the weekend off. I wonder if she's doing anything seafare-ish. What do you think? or maybe just enjoying family this weekend.
I think she's up in Canada. So
oh, that's right. Okay. No seafare
traffic
for her.
Although it has been delightful Thursday and Friday.
Yes.
Out on my deck, I was watching the Blue Angels practice.
Oh, nice.
And they were, you know, roaring around and doing their tricks and rolls and loops. And 2 days in a row, I got to watch them from my deck.
Oh, how fun. Did you hear them and then run out? Or did you know, already outside?
Well, no, I was actually on the deck with my computer.
Okay. Well, if you're going to do some work, you do it outside.
Looking up some references, and I heard these military jets, and I turned around and there they were. So I turned off the computer and I just watched the show for a while.
Wonderful.
So it was kind of nice.
Yes, this is a beautiful time of year. And boy, are they getting some gorgeous weather for this. It's amazing for seafare. Well, welcome to the show. Dr. Umat on vacation. Dr. Mixon is here. And let me go ahead and give that phone number out. We don't want you to wait until the very end of the show and not have your question answered. Phone lines right now are empty. So come on in and get in the queue this morning and we'll get to your questions early. 206-644-6006 is that number to call. It's 206-644-6006. And Dr. Mixon, we always like to start off the show with anything new or whatever health is making, medical things are making the news. And it seems like, is COVID coming back or what's happening? They're calling it summer COVID.
Yeah.
It's like, what is up with that?
Well, the politicians are, you know, trying to scare us.
Trying
to find a reason why they can, you know, shut everything down and seize unconstitutional powers again. I don't think people are going to put up with it. And certainly the numbers of COVID that we're seeing are just not justifying any dramatic change. Yes, there are more cases of COVID. You know, it's going to be a seasonal thing. And the good news is for the vast majority of people, it is a 2 or 3 day mild infection and it goes away and you do just fine. Yes, if you are over 85 and fragile and in a nursing home, you are at high risk of dying of COVID, but you're at high risk of dying of everything. So I'm not terribly excited about the so-called summer COVID epidemic. I am, however, fascinated by the conflicting studies I'm seeing about exercise and COVID. You know, long COVID is interfering with a lot of people's lives. Long COVID is fatigue, lethargy, fuzzy head, difficulty concentrating, and serious exercise intolerance. And so people have been looking for what's going on with it. I saw one study recently that said, you know, is heart rate the answer? Well, it turns out that heart rate does go a little faster, but it looks no faster than you would see with people that are just deconditioned. When everything hurts and when you're just so tired you can barely move, people stop exercising. And people over 60 who are not daily active lose muscle really fast. You want to kill an older person, put them to bed for 2 weeks. There's a good chance they'll never stand up again. I mean, it is that severe. Young people tolerate inactivity better. They maintain muscle mass. Older people lose strength and lose energy very quickly. And so when they get long COVID and they're tired, they stop exercising. And the decrease in physical activity results in their losing strength and muscle mass very quickly. And then they can't exercise. And it's turning out that one of the things that helps people to recover is, in fact, the myokines produced by contracting muscle. So at some point, we have to get these people moving again. And it's going to be a real chore because the disease has caused them to be so tired they can barely move, and yet moving, working muscle is probably going to turn out right now to be our best cure. Those 300-plus myokines produced by healthy muscle repair nerve damage. They let you grow new nerves, but they help you repair the damaged nerves that have been damaged by the COVID. They also help your heart to get stronger, and you pump better blood, and you clean out your blood vessels, etc. So the best recommendation I've seen so far for long COVID, and when I looked at this, I cringed when I saw the recommendations. Because they're tough.
They're not easy. You can't just take a pill. You can't just take a supplement.
No, for men, it is they should get their percentage of body fat under 14%, 12 to 14% body fat. Now, that is going to decrease the amount of inflammatory cytokines produced by their central fat. Women, it turns out, can tolerate higher percentages of body fat than men.
Hmm.
The recommendation is that women should get down to 22 to 24%.
We can tolerate it, but I think we hate it.
Right.
Not fair.
That's right. But see, women are supposed to have a little more fat than men.
That's true.
We are supposed to be lean and angular. So normal body fat for a man runs between 9 to 20%. That's a wide range, 9% to 20%. So the recommendation is 12 to 14% to try to get rid of COVID.
Okay.
And for a woman, normal goes up to 29%. And so if we can get them down to 22 to 24%, women are in pretty decent shape.
Okay.
But then the other really hard part, nice, because losing the body fat is going to be tough to start with. And that is building enough muscle mass and resistance training. And women don't like to do resistance training. Women prefer to do aerobic activities.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Are they afraid of the word muscle making?
They're afraid that they'll make
bulky?
Big muscles, and they can't. Okay. Women, if they've got a female hormone balance, there's no way on earth they can build male type muscle.
You're not going to look like a bodybuilder doing resistance.
If you see women with great big bulging muscles, those are women that are supplementing anabolic hormones.
Yeah, they're doing more than just
that's not
resistance.
Exercise. That's
okay.
Right. So, but women need the resistance training, and I'm not talking about 2 pound weights. They need to start with 2 pound weights, mm-hmm. but they need to work them up so that they're doing curls with 15 pound weights or so. Now, I'm not going to recommend they try my 45 pound weights.
No, those are the ones you have in your office, right?
Those are the ones in my office.
We see you doing those occasionally.
You have trouble picking up with.
Oh yes, every day he's in there.
But those are for guys my size.
Okay.
But start with 2, then do 3, then do 4, then do 5, then do 7, then do 10, then do 12, then do 15. Women need to get as much resistance training as they can, and they need to do it every single day. And it's going to be miserable because everything about long COVID is going to scream, sit down and leave me alone.
Go to sleep. Yeah, you're tired. You're sore. Oh,
right.
Boy.
Okay. So it's going to take a personal trainer with a Simon Legree complex to crack that whip and get you moving.
There you go. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that update on what's going on with COVID in our world today, Dr. Mixon. Are you ready for a phone call? We got a couple of them waiting for you.
Ready. Let's go.
All right. Let's go to Auburn. We have Dennis on the line. Hi there, Dennis. Good morning.
Hello, Dennis. Dennis.
Hi, Dennis.
Speak to us, Dennis.
Okay.
Ah.
Uh-oh.
Oh,
Okay, we've got a frozen
phone
bank.
So this is not Dennis's problem. This is the station's problem. So
there we go. We'll wait just a second as they unfreeze
They got to reboot the phone bank.
That's right. Oh, I know how that goes.
Okay.
Let's give the phone number, though.
Advice to the station, pay the phone bill.
There we go. Yes. 206-644-6006 to call in. All right. And we've got Dennis waiting here. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for waiting.
Hello, Dennis.
Thanks. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes.
I hear you now. Yes, sir.
Okay. So I have a prostate problem.
Okay.
And the urine flow is not good.
Okay.
I'm on finasteride and Camlosun.
Okay.
But still having difficulty holding water.
Uh-huh.
And also have ED. So.
Okay.
Other than that, I'm fine.
Okay.
All right. Well, those sound like some significant problems on the other hand. So are you getting to the point that your urologist is starting to talk about surgery?
Yes. He's talking about the, I only know it as the Roto-Rooter process.
Okay.
I was looking for suggestions of what might be better process.
Okay. Well, if I had to have prostate surgery, I would look for a doctor that does the Rezum procedure. Okay, R-E-Z-U-M, Rezum. This is much less traumatic and it has a lot fewer complications. Now, not everybody is a good candidate for it, and not every doctor does it. But instead of going through with a cutting loop, and basically destroying the prostatic urethra and cutting away the external valve, they just take a little curved needle and stick it up into the prostate and inject a little burst of steam that kills parts of the prostate. And they do that in several spots around the prostatic urethra, and kill enough of the prostate that the prostate can then shrink down and take the pressure off the urethra. It works in a high percentage of people. It has a lot fewer side effects and is less likely to result in long-term urinary incontinence. The old Roto-Rooter, where they're using the microwave cutting loop, you can pretty much guarantee that you will be wearing an adult diaper or a catheter for 3 to 6 months while you try to regain control of your bladder. And some people, it's long-term leakage. So that's low on my list of things to do.
Ah, okay.
The erectile disorder is very common with this problem, by the way. What happens when that bladder doesn't empty completely? You're only peeing off the top 50 or 75 cc's of the bladder usually. And so the bladder stays stretched. And the penile nerves that allow you to have erections come right across that bladder and they get stretched. And the chronic stretch of being stretched all the time makes them not work. And so men with urinary obstruction from prostatic hypertrophy often have ED. And if you can fix that and let the bladder fully empty, frequently within a few months, the erectile disorder will resolve. That's the hopeful news. Okay.
Okay. It's Rezum, R-E-S-U-M.
R-E-Z-U-M, the Rezum procedure. And if you go online, you can find a lot of urologists that do the Rezum procedure. If your doctor doesn't, I'd suggest getting a consult from a doctor that does. Okay. Now, music says we got to take a break. Don't go away because I got something else I want to talk to you about. Okay.
Okay. Stay right there, Dennis. We'll be right back. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and the phone lines are open for you at 206-644-6006. We'll be right back. Stay. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there, my name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon. Dr. Samira has the weekend off, spending some time with her family today, so she'll be back with us very soon. We are live in the studio right now talking with Dennis about prostate procedures, some of the options and possibilities. And Dr. Mixon, you said you had something to add to that.
Yeah. One of the things I'm doing a whole lot of following in the literature right now is rapamycin, sirolimus. It is probably the best anti-aging drug we've got. And it does have a big impact on the prostate and on erectile function. Now, most of the studies are clearly done in laboratory animals, in rats, not in human beings.
Not in people.
Yeah, because, well, rats are horny little critters, but we can induce erectile disorders in them.
Poor rats.
Yeah, that's right. Well, actually, if we just make them overweight.
That'll do it.
That's all it takes. Get a fat rat, and he loses the ability to copulate. And it's true with people. The single biggest connection with whether or not you're going to have ED is how big around it is on your belly. The bigger your belly, the higher the chance you will develop erectile disorders. But in animals, and we are getting anecdotal reports in human beings, that rapamycin is indeed improving erectile function and shrinking prostates and decreasing inflammation of the prostates.
Okay.
So that's kind of an interesting sort of process. So the question is, what is the right dose? And we don't really know. I just saw a fascinating article saying, you know, we've got our rapamycin information or our practice backwards. Every other drug, we say, what is the dose of the drug necessary to get a particular result? You know, you want to let people sleep. How much of this drug do you have to give? You want to improve their cardiac function. How much of this drug do you have to get? You want to lower the cholesterol. How much does it take? With rapamycin, we have simply said, how much can we give and not have any side effects? And everything else, it's been, we know we're going to cause side effects. Are the side effects worth the benefit? And it's a cost-benefit analysis, okay? We're shooting for this benefit. We're going to ratchet up the dose till we get that benefit. And what would be the side effects there, and are they worth it? Okay. With rapamycin, we're keeping the doses low because we don't want to get any side effects if we can help it. And that may not be smart because it may well be that the higher doses have enough benefit to make it worthwhile to have the side effects. In this case, we know, for instance, that people that are on rapamycin for other reasons, like for organ transplants, it keeps them from getting skin cancers. It lowers their risk of dying from almost every cancer: breast cancer, colon cancer, pancreatic cancers, prostate cancers. It lowers the incidence of all of those cancers, and it makes them grow slower if you get them. So what would be the right dose for that?
Yes.
Okay. Instead of saying, well, we just want to keep the dose where you'll have no side effects, what side effects would you put up with to...
Yes, to have that.
Right. So, yes.
What was that, Dennis?
I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay.
I'm listening.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, in the animals, we're finding that if we use high enough doses, we can restore erectile function in animals that have had it totally knocked out for other reasons. And in the ad hoc literature, these are where there are websites where, or I guess they're chat lines, where hundreds and hundreds of people that are using rapamycin in their day-to-day life are reporting their experiences.
Okay.
And one of the experiences that is consistently being reported is better urine flow and less ED. So guys are, even at the doses we're talking about, it's 4, 6, 8 milligrams once a week, we're getting improvement in prostatic function and in erectile function. Also getting fewer skin cancers and resolution of some skin cancers, which is, I think, is fascinating. I guess with you, I'd if you were one of my patients, I'd be doing a couple of things. I'd be saying, yes, go for the resume, and I'd probably put you on rapamycin to see if we could improve your ED long term that way.
Okay, just how do you spell rapamycin?
R-A-P-A-M-Y-C-I-N. And no, your family doctor will not write it for you.
Will you?
If you're one of our patients, we write it for our patients. Okay. We don't write it to people that are not at our clinic. So,
correct. Okay, then a year or two ago, we talked about this, and you said there's a radiation treatment that you kind of recommended at that time?
At that time, yeah. I've kind of went through an evolution. Before Resume came out, I was looking at a prostatic arterial embolization. It's not really radiation. It's done by radiologists. It's a procedure that's not done by urologists. It's the invasive radiologists. And they thread a cannula into the big artery in your groin. They run that cannula up to the prostate, and they inject a slurry of little tiny micro foam beads that plug up a lot of the smaller arteries in the prostate. And by plugging up those arteries, it shuts off the blood supply to a lot of areas in the prostate, and that causes those areas to die and shrivel up and go away, and that shrinks the prostate down. Okay. And so that was a way to get you a smaller prostate without having to cut anything out or inject things. The Resume is another way to do only minor trauma and still get a smaller prostate. But those two, I think, are the least invasive ways we have now, and with the fewest complications and side effects, to give a guy with a big prostate a smaller prostate.
Okay. Thank you very much for your information. I have a side question if you've got time.
Sure.
Go ahead.
My right ankle, I ruptured the tendon in my ankle in the upper, so it causes my foot to flop down.
You got a foot drop. Yeah.
Oh.
So the doctor's saying he wants to put it in a cast and immobilize it for quite some time, and I'm about 2 weeks shy of 80. I'm not real happy with that. Will it heal by itself?
Frequently, younger people heal these a lot better than older people, obviously, just because your cell turnover is dramatically slower than it was when you were young. But in older people, surgery to tie them back together fails a lot. And that's why he's probably looking at a more conservative approach of putting you in a boot, cranking that foot over so that the two ends get close together, and hopefully they will heal on their own without having to have a surgical procedure.
All right.
If he does that, you're going to need to stay as active as you can. Because old folks who go to bed or sit around, they get sick and die.
We don't want that, Dennis.
I still golf once a week.
Okay, you have to do it with your knee board.
I try for 7,000 steps a day, so.
Good for you.
Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. You keep it up, my friend.
Thank you.
Take care.
And thank you for your show. I appreciate all you guys do. So.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call, Dennis. All right. We're going to take a quick break right now, but we will be back. I've got a couple questions about COVID for you, doctor, and something about magnesium coming up next. And if you have a question, here is the number to get through. Phone lines are open for you at 206-644-6006. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment.
Pete Talbot here again.
After driving out the memory of the way things might have been, after I've forgotten all about us, the song remembers when.
This is a sweet song.
It is.
Oh.
It is. else. And you know, it's absolutely true that you'll be driving along and you hear a song, and all of a sudden it evokes a very strong memory of some sort.
Yes.
Not always a previous lover, but mm-hmm. perhaps a trip or an activity or someone you knew. You know, music has incredible power to bring back memories.
It's true. Yeah, the song remembers when. I love that. You picked that out. Good job, Dr. Mixon. Yes. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning, Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio. I'm Lynette, and we are headed to Tacoma right now. We have John on the line. Hi there, John.
Hello.
Hello, John.
Oh, could you give me some information on magnesium? It seems like there's so many varieties or whatnot of magnesium out there, and I'm just trying to figure out what's the best one to use.
There is no one best one. It depends what you're trying to accomplish.
Oh, yeah.
For instance, if you're trying to get improved magnesium levels in your brain, magnesium threonate gets across the blood-brain barrier the best. If you're constipated and you want to use magnesium to pull water into your bowel so that you poop, magnesium citrate is almost none of it is absorbed into your bloodstream. So it all stays in the bowel and sucks in water and makes that stool go flowing through. If you're looking for muscle cramps.
Oh, those Charlie horses
in the middle
of the night.
And so on. Then magnesium threonate and magnesium glycinate.
What kind are you looking for? What are you hoping the magnesium will help you with, John?
Cramps mostly.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Then for that one, there's a mixture of the threonate and glycinate and arginate, I think, too. If you go to our website, lmclinic.com, and go to the products, and on the search, just type in magnesium. You'll get something that says muscle relief.
Okay.
And it's a mixture of magnesium salts that are well absorbed into the peripheral system so that they make those muscles relax and get rid of the night cramps.
Oh, great. I will give that a try.
Yeah. And then for our people who are worried about their memory and stuff, we carry a magnesium threonate that is designed for to get it into their brains.
And what is that called? Does that have a different name, like
no,
a memory?
Right now it's just magnesium threonate.
Okay.
We're going to be, I think, putting that together with some other stuff, though, and we'll then give that one a specific name. But, yeah, you can just call our staff. We can get you the threonate.
Would you be able to take the threonate and the muscle relief together now?
I take them both every day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Oh, wonderful. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome, sir.
Yeah, thank you for the question, John.
That was an easy one.
That was an easy one. Very good. No stump the doctors so far.
I've had some tough questions today.
All right. And here is the number if you have a question for Dr. Mixon today, 206-644-6006. We're going to Orting. We have Ernie on the line. Hi there, Ernie. Good morning.
Hello, Ernie from Orting.
Okay, I'm going to – I'm his wife, and I just needed to start off. He wanted me to start off with this problem.
Okay.
He basically has had – after COVID, he came down with his body filling up with fluid. Mm. And he's had like 5 different thoracentesis where they take out a liter and a half of fluid around his lungs. And he's on water pills and swollen legs, swollen ankles, swollen. I mean, he's so miserable. And
is he congestive heart failure or kidney failure?
Some of each. I'm going to have you talk to him. I just wanted to give the head up thing.
Okay.
And we'll have you turn your radio down.
Turn the radio down because that 8-second delay would drive us crazy.
Thank you.
Now, see, I still hear it in the background.
There we go.
There we go. Okay.
Okay, and now I bet we have Ernie on the line. Hi there, Ernie. Yes.
Hi.
Hi. Okay.
So I am here. I've heard last week and this week twice already a lot of different things that are occurring to people that have long-term COVID.
Yep.
Well, next Thursday I'm going to be 1 year that I've had long-term COVID. And but in your discussions and everything, I have not had anyone mention the fact of fluid retention, which I have almost every other week. I have to go in and draw 1.5 liters of fluid from my body because of build up. It gets into my ankles and my lower legs and everything. And so my question is really, the doctors, when I talk to them, they say they have absolutely no way of knowing or why people keep making fluid. Yes. I'm 87 years old. And a year ago, I was in perfect health. Uh-huh. Absolutely no problems at all, nothing. No aches, no pains, nothing. Mm-hmm. Exercising, riding bikes, all that stuff. And, boom, overnight I get hit this COVID, and I've just been dragging my butt around ever since. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm wondering, do you by any chance know why my body keeps rebuilding this fluid?
I can think of two very common reasons for this to happen, and both can happen as a result of COVID injury. And one is congestive heart failure, and the other is renal failure. So are you seeing a cardiologist? Are you seeing a nephrologist?
Yes. In fact, I've been to the hospital 4 times already, and okay. They do all kinds of checking and everything, but they're not coming up with anything. They gave me all kinds of things. My blood count was way down, so they gave me stuff to bring that back up, and things like that. And then they send me home after 2.5 days, and within a week, I'm back right where I started from.
Okay. See the.
So, yeah, and they've checked for congestive heart. I mean, they've just checked all kinds of stuff, you know.
Huh. Yeah, because those are the two biggies to cause fluid retention, especially in your legs. If it was just in your lungs, I'd say, well, maybe you've had an injury from the microvascular clots or something that's causing the inflammation in your lungs. But when you're talking about the feet swelling and the legs swelling, now that sounds more like congestive heart failure.
Okay, I need to see, in the hospital, they did a lot of checking. My cardiologist, I have a pacemaker that I've had for 8 years, mm-hmm. and I'm due to see him here because I'm getting, after 8 years, I figured maybe it's time of getting closer to a battery change. So I'm going to be talking to the clinic that monitors all that. And I don't know, but I know they've been checking my heart. They just checked everything on me. But and then they send me, say, you can go home. I don't know why you're even here, blah, 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 that kind of stuff.
Well, my question, of course, is what diagnosis have they given you? If they've worked this up, they've got some idea what's happening to you. They may not know how to fix it, but they should know what's happening to you.
Yeah. They know what's happening. They know about the fluid.
Well, no, I understand, but there are only certain reasons people retain fluid, okay? You can have an anti-diuretic hormone dysfunction where your brain is been damaged in the hypothalamus, or you can have congestive failure, you can have renal failure. Those are about the only three I can think of off the top of my head.
Okay.
It may be that they just have not told you about what they're thinking. I even hate to entertain that thought, but the fact is you're in your 80s.
Yeah.
And too often physicians become kind of nihilistic once people hit 80. They don't sit down and really give you all the information as though suddenly at 80 you get stupid and you're not able to understand.
Yeah, and you're going to be dying next week anyway.
Yeah, that's right. So, why do we worry him when we'll just, that's crazy. You're a grown-up by any measure at 80, and you certainly deserve to know everything they know.
Yeah.
On the radio, I can't give you a firm diagnosis. I can just raise some possibilities. But if I were you, I would go back, I would sit down with the doctor, and I'd say, look, is this my heart? Is this my kidneys? Is this something in my hypothalamus? What is going on?
Yeah.
And let him know you really want to know. And don't don't let him just skate out of the room with a 30-second hail and well met good fellow. I once told a very nice lady to, you know, they give you that little chair you can sit in. It's up against the wall. And I said, when the doctor comes in and closes the door, move that little chair, sit right in front of the door, and don't get up until he answers your questions. So,
yeah, I hear you.
So, because it's your body, it's your life, you deserve to know.
Yeah. So. Okay, have you heard in the past, too, that people do have fluid retention and it's been traced to
congestive failure. Yeah, congestive failure and kidney failure are the two biggest causes, and they both can happen with COVID. And they can both happen with COVID in the same person. So, yes.
Oh, that's me. Probably. Mm. Oh, I know. Anyway, 1 year, next Thursday, 1 year, yeah. Long-term COVID.
Congratulations. That's an anniversary. I wish we didn't have to celebrate.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, wishing you the best, Ernie. Thank you for your call.
Yeah. Bye-bye, sir.
And thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll continue with more of your calls. This is Leading Edge Medicine. The phone number to get through is 206-644-6006. We're back after this.
The race is on and here comes pride in the backstretch. Heartache going to the inside. My tears are holding back there. I'm trying not to fall. My heart's out of the running. Two loves scratch for another sake. The race is on and it looks like heartache. And the winner loses all.
Leading Edge Medicine returns. We're back. I'm Lynette, Dr. Jerry Mixon here in the studio. We gave Dr. Umat the weekend off so she could enjoy her family.
Actually, it wasn't me giving her. She just said, yes, I won't be in. About Wednesday, she said, you're doing the show on your own. I'm out of town. Okay.
Okay, we'll let that go. Now, we were just talking about COVID, Dr. Mixon, and we had an off-air question from somebody that and I thought we'll touch on this real quick before going to our next call. Doug wanted to know what happened to the conversation around herd immunity. Does it work? Do we have it yet?
Yes, we have it.
Okay, we have it.
And we've had it for a long time. The reason COVID keeps coming back is it's an RNA virus. Human beings do not make long-term immunity to RNA viruses, to any RNA virus.
Okay.
Right. That's why one-third of the common colds are caused by RNA viruses. And guess what? When you've had a cold once in your life, you can get a cold again.
You can get it again.
Okay. Influenza, flu, is an RNA virus. And we have to keep doing flu shots every year because we don't make lifetime immunity to RNA viruses. When the politicians were saying, well, we're just going to give everybody a shot and it's going to be, no, it doesn't work with RNA viruses.
And they don't know that because they're politicians.
Yes. You know, I love it when a politician who knows no science starts screaming, follow the science. Well, if I follow the science, I have to ignore you, moron, because you don't know any.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yes, we have herd immunity to the degree you can get herd immunity to an RNA virus.
Okay. All right. We just wanted to answer that quick question while we were on the COVID topic. All right. We are going to Auburn now. John is on the line. Thank you, John. Good morning.
Good morning, gentle people. my story starts with urothelial carcinoma, chemotherapy, and radiation. Then it morphed into Gleason 10 prostate cancer. Ooh. And then I went to Lupron, and then had to be augmented with darolutamide. And then I've developed a rectal mass that is an undifferentiated form of cancer. That rectal mass has breached into my bladder so that when I flush my suprapubic catheter, that fluid exits my rectum.
Yeah. So you got a fistula.
Yes. I've been urged to get a colostomy, but I don't want one. And the first doctor I talked to indicated that she thought it best that I get a surgeon, thinking surgeon only. Well, I've been able to excrete by keeping my stool soft, so it's never been total blockage. However, there's been that breach so that, you know, when I undo my bag, there's a stench that comes up mm-hmm. out of there. I also exit gas out of my suprapubic hole.
Sure.
Then I went to a colorectal surgeon and he said, I think you should just ignore the colostomy for now. And just, if we have to, we'll put one in, but let's just leave it, not put it in now. Uh-huh. I've been put on Keytruda. I've had my second infusion, and I don't know that I can feel that the rectal mass has shrunk. And so, and I've been warned that it can take up to 6 weeks before you even begin to feel any change, if you even feel it.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the refreshing things about this colorectal doctor is he said to me, you know, you're never going to cure your cancer. And it's like what you've been saying, that when you get one cancer and you get treated, you develop another cancer. Yes.
Cancer formers form cancers. That's just the way it is.
And he's the only doctor that's ever said that to me. So I'm Keytruda. I went down to MD Anderson, and I checked in there to see what they had to say. And they basically agreed with that therapy. I had a DNA analysis at UW, and that more or less qualified me to get Keytruda. I don't know what to expect, but do you have any? Oh, by the way, in constipation, yeah. I'm using primary Miralax. The magnesium citrate is unavailable. There's a national shortage of the product. Just a couple pharmacies in the area, they didn't have it. So, Penny, for your thoughts.
Depression.
Oh.
There was a song on Hee Haw many years ago. Do you remember the words to it?
Doom, despair, and agony on me. Dark depression, excessive misery.
Yeah, if it weren't for
Bad luck, I'd have no luck at all.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember
God
that.
Almighty.
Yeah.
It sounds like this is your theme song, my friend.
Yeah. John.
Whoa.
And that reminds me, someday I want you to see, there's my memory going too. Freebird. I want you to play Freebird.
Oh, Freebird.
Why not? Sure.
Yeah. Our producer might find that for you.
Okay. Yeah. Producer, look for Freebird.
Yes. John needs that today.
Yeah. I mean, John, I wish I could say something cheerful and encouraging, but you depressed the hell out of me.
Yeah. You got a lot going on.
The fact is, you know, you start with one cancer, you got another cancer, you got another cancer. Your immune system has simply failed when it comes to recognizing and destroying malignancies. And, you know, I think, I suspect you've already come to the conclusion that, you know, sooner or later, one or more of these are going to get you.
I can expect 100 years.
No. I would not make 30-year plans. Sounds to me, I mean, you're seeing the top cancer people in the country. Between going over to Hutch and going down to MD Anderson, and I mean, there's nothing this old reformed country doctor who treats aging is going to be able to do to fix this.
My oncologist, I actually have a couple, but one has become more primary, and he said I don't have to take the darolutamide. And so we'll be watching I'm still on Lupron.
Okay.
So I, you know, I don't know what to, you know, and I've been, I think I've been subclinically depressed, and I failed exercise and not really eat right. Well, I'm beginning to exercise now.
Good.
And it's strictly, it's walking, but I'm wobbly. You know, if you watch me closely, you know, you think I'm drunk. But I can walk, you know, it's easy to walk. I walk a mile easily and I could go 2 miles and I will, and I'll keep that up. Do you think I should, that it's wise to stop the darolutamide?
I don't think it's going to do much good at this point. I mean, I'm,
well, but
your oncologists are the ones, you know, that can, that should give you the advice as to whether to stop it or not. But from the story you're telling me, it just doesn't sound to me like it's doing the job.
Down at MD Anderson, they did a PET CT scan. This was probably about a month ago.
Uh-huh.
And my cancer had not metastasized at that point. And it also, at that point, it hadn't breached into my bladder.
Okay.
So
we've got to take a break. When you come back, I've got one more brief comment about maybe to help you with that bowel a little bit. But
okay, stay right there, John.
Sit tight, we'll be right back.
That's right. And Ray, John, Mickey, Ellie, and Daniel, we'll get to your calls too. Thank you for waiting. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll take a quick break and we will return for hour number two, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Stay right there.